for May 10th, 2007 will come to order. We have a number of items on our agenda for today, so we ask people who are here for public hearings to be expeditious. If you have written testimony for us, we promise we will read it. You don't need to read your entire witness written testimony, but if you will stick to the main points of your testimony, we appreciate that very much. The first thing we're going to do is open a public hearing on House Bill 2530. Chris? I'm sorry, Paul?
Mr. Chair, we had a hearing earlier on House Bill 2530. As you recall, it is a major restructuring of the state's tax system. It reduces personal income tax rates to 2, 4, and 6%, establishes a 4% rate on capital gains, has a refundable earned income credit at 25%, provides estate tax relief, establishes a homestead exemption at $25,000 on residential property, has a renter relief program built into it, and it establishes a broad-based goods and services tax. Again, remind the committee that the draft language in there is really based on some work that was done quite some time ago in the early 90s. So there would need to be some updating and cleanup of that language around the consumption tax base. It also established the exemptions within that base, and then has a net revenue impact from the package, if it were fully in place in 2009-11, of $881 million. And I also shared with the committee some of the work we had done on the distribution, how it might affect typical families of four in different income brackets. And you should have that in your file with the bill.
Thank you very much. We have several people signed up to testify on this bill today, and I'm just going to call them in order. If I could have the first two, Roger Warren and Doug Riggs.
Is this right?
Yes. Thank you very much.
I'm having a Borat experience here, so.
Oh, you're doing fine.
Okay.
If you will identify yourself for the record and then give your testimony, we would appreciate that.
Sure. I'm Roger Warren, and I had two things to share with the committee. My daughter is 30 years old and lives with her family in Seattle. And I've gone shopping with her, pushing the shopping cart through the grocery market. And it seems that she can generate a tape this long and only be taxed on about three items. And it's like a couple of dollars. And then she's also bought a car recently, a used car, for $10,000, and it cost about $900 there. So I wanted to share that because I didn't know. Did you have anybody out of state that you could talk to? So that's what I wanted to share. Also, just for your interest, I've done a little bit of volunteering at a family homeless shelter, and they almost all smoke. I wanted to let you know that because that's kind of the big issue around here, smoking. So I wanted to let you know it looks like they're mostly smokers.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Warren? Thank you, sir. We appreciate your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Doug Riggs here on behalf of the Oregon Primary Care Association, a health care organization. We're testifying in support of tax reform. I won't go into my written testimony, which is brief as it is, but I do want to say that the main reason that we're interested in tax reform, and in particular House Bill 2530, is the need for us to achieve some more stability in our revenue system, revenue structure. As I'm sure other witnesses have testified, during the economic downturn in 2000-2001, especially capital gains taxes dropped dramatically. This led to a huge reduction in revenues available for the state, and as a result, programs that we and our populations depend on, like the Oregon Health Plan, were devastated. We had 80,000-plus people cut off the Oregon Health Plan. Those people continue to have health problems. Their health problems, in many cases, are untreated or treated in the emergency room. And we bear the brunt of those health problems. So our interest in this is coming up with a tax structure that is a little more stable and gives us a little more predictability over the long term. So with that, I'll conclude my testimony.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Questions for Mr. Riggs? Thank you, sir. Daryl Fuller, John Mullen.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller for the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association. My testimony today will look similar to the testimony I provided on the sales tax bill. I believe it was 3187 a couple of weeks ago. The only difference between the two bills is this one has the sections at the beginning that provide tax relief where the other one was the simple sales and use tax bill. So I won't bore you with my testimony a second time other than to remind you that I believe the way the bill is written that the sales tax on motor vehicles would go to the Highway Trust Fund, not into the general fund. And so the calculations on the amount of money that this would generate I think are probably inaccurate. That dealers would prefer an exemption for traded-in vehicles prior to calculating the sales tax, as it happens in Washington State. And another alternative to that in terms of large purchases would be a reduced sales tax on purchases over a certain amount, acknowledging the fact that a sales tax on high-price items would reduce the consumer's ability to make that purchase. And so a lower sales tax on certain items might be appropriate. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, John Mullen, and I'm here today as the co-chair of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon, and I've submitted some written testimony. Just briefly, though, the Human Services Coalition of Oregon has been around since about the mid-1980s and involves about 80 different organizations and individuals that get together to talk about, advocate, educate, influence around issues relating to human services. We've long been involved in the discussion about tax reform in this state, and in fact, back in the late 80s, I believe it was, we were involved in the Heart of Oregon discussion. Representative Rosenbaum was involved in that before she was in the legislature. We tried to educate people about Oregon's tax system, and which was a high bar to begin with for people to understand the tax system such as it is. But one of the things that we came away with was adopting some principles for what tax reform should look like. And so I want to be clear about the fact that the Human Services Coalition has not taken a position on House Bill 2530, but there are many features of the bill that do meet the test of our principles, and they're enumerated in your handout, and I'll just touch on them briefly. Fairness, obviously, we're concerned about low-income people and want to make sure that taxes are progressive to the extent possible. Adequacy, as a number of other people will have talked about our tax system and what that means, and also the constitutional reference that's there that I'm sure that you've heard many times. Senator Gordley has pointed out many times during the session about the constitutional provision that binds the Oregon legislature to come up with adequate revenue to meet needs. Stability has been well talked about here, and that's been a major concern year in and year out as far as the tax system is concerned. We also, though, took a kind of an unusual stance for a human service organization. We talked about the competitiveness of tax issues, recognizing that we can't be so far out of sync with neighboring states that it would have a competitive disadvantage. So we're pleased that you're hearing this bill, and we're pleased that you're hearing other bills related to revenue, and we'd be happy to have further discussion with this committee and others here in this building with regard to raising revenue during this session to meet needs, as well as overall tax reform. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions for the, this panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony very much. Dana Hepper and Mr. King.
Yeah, right. I wouldn't want to put him on this.
My name is Dana Hepper. I'm the statewide advocacy coordinator with Stand for Children and a former public school teacher. And that's a huge motivation for me as an individual and Stand for Children as an organization to support comprehensive tax reform is that our children are learning in overcrowded schools. They have over 30 kids in elementary school classrooms. And we've been talking a lot in this building about how 117,000 of them are uninsured. And so these are some problems I think we need to address. And I definitely see this bill as relevant to those concerns. So we are here to support changes to Oregon's revenue systems and spending systems, although we have no specific position on the bill today. But we have similar principles to the Human Services Coalition that was just up here. One, stability. So we would support a system that has at least a 15% rainy day fund and increased diversity in our tax base. Two, adequacy. We're over $1 billion short of funding the quality education model, not to mention the uninsured children, the health and human service needs, not having our roads staffed 24 hours a day. And so we live system that would get us to a place where we could adequately fund services for children and their families. Three is fairness, already talked about, and the fourth is accountability. So as we look at revenue systems, we also want to be a part of looking at spending systems and how we prioritize our money and making sure that as we spend money, we spend in a way that's long-term fiscally responsible. And I'll close with that, but just would, you know, just ask that we be at the table for these discussions and commit that we are on the ready to talk with voters and the public about what we come up with here in this body.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Monty King. I'm with the Oregon Vehicle Dealer Association. We're not taking a position on the bill itself, but on the trade-in values. As Mr. Fuller said, there's no exemption for what you traded in. So therefore, all of you are going to be double taxed on your cars when you trade them in. You're going to pay taxes when you buy it. You're basically going to pay taxes when you sell it as a trade-in. And then the person buying a trade-in from the dealer is going to pay the taxes again. In almost every state in the United States, there is an exemption for the trade-in value, and that should be in the bill no matter what kind of bill you're ever going to put together. That should always be there. If you don't do that, I think that probably when it comes up for a vote of the people, every car lot's going to have this little sign in here saying you're going to get double taxed on your trade-ins. So I think it's a real loser provision to keep that element in there the way it is. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure which I'm more afraid of, the used car dealers or the stands for children. I just needed to make sure on Dana's testimony. Dana, your testimony is that we're presently $1 billion short of the QEM. Is that right?
Chair Barnhart and Representative Butler, yeah, I believe we're significantly more than $1 billion short of the QEM.
Right. And then that was in addition to the Oregon State Troopers and Tamar Collection, those kind of things.
That's right. And just lastly, Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, we also urge looking at the spending side and seeing what we can do there.
Thank you.
Good idea.
Thanks.
The QEM this year is something over 7.8, isn't it? Thank you. 7.8 billion.
So we're a billion and a half.
We're a billion and a half short on the QEM right now. I refer you back to Senator Morris's testimony from some time ago about our structural deficit.
I hope we've gotten better since then.
thank you. I have two members who have asked to be heard last, but I'd like to find out if there's any other members of the public who would like to be heard on this bill. Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Don Schellenberg representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. And we're not taking a position again either on the bill as in total, but I wanted to call your attention to the taxation issue in general. From a purely technical point of view, either an income tax or a sales tax, sales and use tax, can be constructed so one is as fair to the taxpayer as is the other. This is also true as it relates to being fair for business taxpayers. The bottom line premise for fairness for business income tax is that business expenses must be deductible. The bottom line premise for fairness for business with a sales tax is that business expenses must be exempt. You'll recall the old saying that businesses don't pay taxes, people do. That, of course, is true when you're selling retail and have the ability to pass on your tax on to the consumer. Agriculture gets a little extra concerned about the new taxes or tax increases because we cannot pass on our costs. So it's doubly important for us that all business expenses under a sales tax are permanently exempt. The concepts I've just mentioned have guided our House of Delegates when they adopted the following policy statement regarding a sales tax. Quote, any standalone Oregon state sales tax must have the following provisions. One, the rate and agriculture exemptions are established in the Constitution. Two, money collected from a state sales tax is only to be used to reduce the state income tax. Three, prescription drugs, food purchased for home preparation, livestock, feed, seed, pesticides, processing or cleaning of agricultural products, fees for agricultural business services performed, farm equipment, parts and repairs for farm equipment, and any item that is consumed or used in the production of or becomes a part of an agricultural product shall be constitutionally exempt from the tax. 4, no county, city, district, or other municipal corporation or political subdivision may impose a general retail sales and use tax. The listing of these provisions do not constitute an endorsement. We believe the provisions, these provisions would put us on par with all other businesses and with the personal taxpayer community. So as you consider 2530 and you consider the possibility of enacting a sales tax, those are the provisions that would be key for us and would be, of course, happy to be a part of that discussion. So thank you for listening to my testimony today. Be happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Questions, Representative Butler.
Just one quick question, Don. No local sales tax would be the position if all the other conditions are met. One concern I've got is what of the local permit fees and those kinds of things that we see cropping up? Would those be the same as sales taxes in the view of the Oregon Farm Bureau?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, there are in some cases rationale certainly for fees. And as those apply to agriculture and they benefit agriculture, then we would give those serious consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Gurley, are you here on this bill?
I am, but I would defer to members of the public first.
Yes, thank you. Are there any other members of the public that would like to be heard? Yes, please.
Hello, my name is Suzanne Van Orman. I am a former Head Start director, having operated Head Start programs in the state of Oregon and Washington, operating out of Hood River. I'm also a former city commissioner for the city of Oregon City. And the comment about fees, I don't think Oregon City was extraordinary in the fact that the fees are what pay for the development departments. Without those fees, cities would not be able to operate. I think based on my experience and having done Head Start reviews in a number of programs, it's just extraordinary to me how Washington is able to do so much more. And, of course, they have a wealth base that we don't particularly have, but they've managed to leverage a great many services for the sales tax that they collect. But they do collect a lot of fees as well. And I've paid sales tax on a Head Start school bus. I also I did manage to escape a transfer tax because I contended that the feds owned the building and we didn't. So I just think that, and I've attended two Ways and Means Committee hearings this year, and there is no doubt that we have got to do something. There's just too many things happening, and we have children in Hood River who have no faith in the higher education system of Oregon and are choosing to go elsewhere. And that, I think, to me is very painful as an Oregonian to have your own children ashamed of your state. So I just bring up those few points. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Yes, Representative Butler.
Just one question for Ms. Van Orman. Ms. Van Orman, that you say Washington State has a wealth base which we do not have.
They have industries that are. They have more industry. You can look at King County and look at their industrial base. Their, Microsoft exists there. So they have a larger base. But the reality is those companies pay sales tax. Everything they do, they are buying whatever they buy, they pay a sales tax. So that's what I mean, is that we just don't have that economic base that they have.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other questions? I don't see any.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Are there other members of the public who would like to be heard on this bill today? Yes, please. Are there any other members of the public who would like to be heard today? Yes, please. Come forward. Anyone else? Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Mary Lou Brophy from Jacksonville, Oregon, west of Medford. And this is of great concern to me because I participate in the Mental Health Caucus, and I've been a licensed psychotherapist for almost 26 years. I am terribly concerned about the sort of Band-Aid approach we are taking when it comes to our care for our people in Oregon in terms of their mental health. And Representative Sal Esquivel first explained to me the need for overall tax reform, which strikes me as a principle of justice to have a much more equitable source for our taxation. And I realize it may be short-term pain for long-term gain, but I am absolutely in support of the plan that I have heard Senator Morris explain and Senator Schrader explain, and so I am in support of the bill. I don't see any other way to take care of our people. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is Deborah Gilmore. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Prevention Education and Recovery Association. Our association hasn't taken an official position on the bill other than the position of where treatment and prevention for addiction services has gone in the past particular three biennium. There has been a significant disinvestment in treating addiction and preventing addiction. Those mechanisms that are supposed to be in place, such as the beer tax that would be providing additional funds to be able to treat individuals, has languished in a frozen state for 30 years. So as we look at ways in which we are supposed to be funding these very issues, I would seriously hope that this body considers how we can look at this issue and fund what needs to be funded, because at this point, we are, as treatment providers and prevention professionals, at a breaking point, because we have more demand than we have trained counselors to be able to deal with it and the ability to even pay individuals, because there has been such a disinvestment in this particular area. So I hope you keep that in mind when you're looking at some of the things that are coming before you now.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Representative Butler.
Thank you. Just to Ms. Gilmore. Ms. Gilmore, you heard testimony here today to indicate that, under the QEM, that just the education model is $1 billion short. If we could raise $800 million, what makes you think that the mental health and addictive services, where we've been disinvesting our money as we've been increasing under the K-12 model, what makes you think that, mental health would get its proportionate share?
I would hope that this body looks at where all the investments are going and look at where we need to be putting money into the system, because I know that children cannot learn if they're coming from a home where they have addicted parents and they've been up all night listening to mom and dad fighting and screaming, or not even be able to have a meal before they go off to school in the morning because there's no one there to take care of them. So when you're looking at this holistically, I hope you understand that addiction has ramifications far and beyond just the individual that has the problem. There are family members that are severely impacted, and our children are those that are the most impacted because they aren't in a position to be able to learn when they do get in the classroom if they're having to deal with this at home.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, my hope is that, if, in fact, we can raise some more money through this or other means, that we'll have these folks at the table as well as everyone else, so that we can meet all of the demands or proportionately.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony today. You come from a long way off, and we appreciate your efforts. Thank you. We're ready to hear now from our members, Senator Gordley, Senator Morris, Representative Esquivel.
For the record, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for letting us talk a little bit about this issue. This issue actually started when I was, in fact, I believe it's the first time I met you, Mr. Chair, was when we were on the tax reform committee about 4 years ago or so, or give or take a few. Had some great ideas on the table. But unfortunately, it was politicized and everyone went home. We never attained anything. The sad part about this state, in my opinion, is how do we as legislators stabilize a budget when we can't stabilize our revenue? That's the big question. The other sad part about this is 90-some percent of the income come from two classifications of people: the working people and the property owner. Unfortunately, or fortunately, we're one and the same. So this is actually, to me, it's a tax cut to the working people that own property. If one looks at the metrics that we have on this tax reform, and this is tax reform, it is a tax cut for the working people that own property. We think, I think we go from $10,000 to $100,000 in those increments, and I believe everyone pays less money this way. What we need to do is to equalize it. We have a tremendous underground in this state. Some has estimated it to be about $1.5 billion per year that we do not collect in taxes. On a conservative effort, we cut that in half and set approximately $800 million. The people that work for cash, your illegal dealers, drug dealers, they don't pay taxes. People that work under the table don't pay taxes. Businesses that come into the state to purchase things, they don't pay taxes. So consequently, we have an imbalanced system. So we're trying to rectify that, and it has its good points and its bad points. We had a couple of focus groups that were very interesting. First of all, I'm pleased to say that when they mentioned sales tax, they didn't all jump up and beat the guy in the head. They were pretty calm about it, which surprised us. In fact, I think we threw Senator Morris in the lion's den and let him talk about it. So it didn't bother me. But people were willing to talk about it. The one big thing that came up was mistrust of government. If we allow this, who's to say that local people won't raise the sales tax or won't raise the income tax or whatever? So we have to build sideboards, and we have to let the people themselves vote on it and control it. We understand we probably will not get there this session, but Senator Morse is going to outline some issues here that we would like to achieve in the form of a committee during the interim. Now, this $800 million is a stabilizing force, and it's something that we're going to reap from this. You're going to hear people say, well, it's a regressive tax, a sales tax. Yes, but, you know, everyone pays their fair share. That is a fact. The other thing is that we have built in some relief for the lower-income people on their tax returns, so they do get some of their money back. In fact, a substantial amount. So Senator Morris is going to go over that, but I just wanted to kind of give you an idea of how we got here and how we attained this. And it's been this is not a new idea. This idea has been floating around now for 3, 4, 5 years or whatever it's been, and probably long before that. But I want to thank Mr. Chair for letting us talk about this issue, and now I'll turn it over to my colleague from the Senate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Frank Morris, represent District 8, Albany and Corvallis in the Senate. And I echo also my colleague's appreciation for holding these hearings. That is very much appreciated. If I were to create a metaphor for today, it would be this metaphor. We're in Hannibal, Missouri, and there is a journey before us. And I use Hannibal because that's where my forefathers came from. And there's a journey before us, and it's called the Oregon Trail. And that Oregon Trail has a path. Others have followed, or others have led in many ways in this path called revenue reform. And we are today at that point of beginning to follow this trail to lead to something better. And that's why we're here. It's an arduous journey. It is not going to be easy. It's going to take time. It will be difficult. There are many, 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 many special interests that want to determine the outcomes. But it's clear to us that have been working on this that status quo in Oregon's revenue structure is not acceptable, and that we do need to start this journey to have a thoughtful discussion about how do we collect revenue, is it adequate, is it stable, and is it meeting the needs of Oregon to carry us into the future? And you've heard from a few folks today about how the disinvestment has affected our state. We could spend the rest of the afternoon talking about those issues. But what we need in this session is the ability to carry this discussion forward in a very comprehensive, thoughtful way and bring the issue back to us in January, actually prior to the session, our regular session, in 2009. And what I would propose for your consideration is an amendment request to House Bill 2530. And, Mr. Chairman, if I may read the whereases that would set the stage for this discussion. Whereas Oregon needs a revenue system which is stable, predictable, and adequate. And whereas Oregon needs a revenue system that stimulates the economy to create and retain family wage jobs. Whereas Oregon's financial support for critical services, including education, human services, public safety, and the judiciary, is stressed. And that's what we've been hearing, and that's what we've gone through. Whereas the cumulative impact of initiatives, coupled with the highly volatile revenue system, has created this stress. And whereas Oregon's local units of government are experiencing a diminished ability to provide services vital to the well-being of Oregon citizens, and whereas the demise of Oregon's public land-dependent timber economy and its effects are now finally being realized with the loss of federal rural payments, and whereas increases in property values are causing unsustainable increases in property taxation that threaten the financial security of Oregon homeowners, small businesses, and farm owners, and whereas Oregons deserve a tax structure that is shared equitably by all for the benefit of all. Mr. Chairman, colleagues, we have the opportunity to either let this discussion drop or to carry it forward in a thoughtful, comprehensive way. And what we would suggest for your consideration is that we do carry it forward. The trail is before us. And there is a better place for us to arrive. What this would do is create a Commission on Comprehensive Revenue Restructuring. You'd give it that title or some other title. You'd have a basic commission of 13 members. The governor would select the chairperson and four members at large. The governor would also select a representative from an Oregon-based small business, a member who is from a large corporation, and two members who represent labor. And then the Speaker of the House would appoint two members, the President of the Senate, two members. And then in the model of the Oregon Inc., Oregon Innovation Council, create a broader cast of support people that would be involved in this discussion, as well as ex officio members, which would be two members from the Oregon Business Trade Associations, two members from Oregon's labor associations, two members from associations representing taxpayers, two members from the Chambers of Commerce, two members from the League of Oregon Cities, two members from the Association of Oregon Counties, the state treasurer. And then you would also have, as a support, the creation of what would be called the Oregon Revenue Advisory Council, consisting of seven members that would be appointed by the Comprehensive Restructuring Commission. And these members would represent the professionals that work in the field of taxation, accountants, economists, tax attorneys. And the Advisory Council would provide technical analysis and make recommendations for consideration. All of this activity would be supported then by our Legislative Revenue Office. And the goal would be to bring back comprehensive tax reform that addresses not just the state, but also local units of government. Particularly, looking at that, are we going to let Oregon rural counties fail? That's a fundamental question, and it's a crisis that's before us. Do we have the time to deal with this? That's in the hands of Congress, but it's incumbent upon us, I think, to include this in the mix of tax reform discussions. So with that, Mr. Chairman, colleagues, it's our fondest hope that this issue will not die in this session, that we will pick up task of comprehensive tax reform and bring back solutions for consideration in the 09 session. And I would entertain any comments or questions and would defer to my colleague, Senator Gorley.
Thank you. Senator Gorley?
Thank you and good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, and all the members of the panel. For the record, I am Avail Gordley, representing Senate District 23 in Multnomah County. And I'd first like to acknowledge and honor my colleagues in the Senate and the House who have brought forward House Bill 2530. And what I want to say to you, I want to say several things. Let me begin by saying that I believe that this is the most important bill in the session because it is tied to Oregon's future. Oregon cannot wait. I speak to you as a native Oregonian in my 60th year. 16 of those years spent in service in this legislative assembly. And for the past 16 years, I've heard various colleagues, both parties, members of the public, say words that in effect keep putting off the inevitable, which is to deal with the fact that we have a revenue system that is broken and that does not serve our current and will not serve our future needs. I've heard my colleagues say over the past 16 years, well, we'll take care of it next session. Well, it'll take another 4 years. Oh, the public's not ready yet. Well, let's take a look at the polling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The Oregon Progress Board 2005 report states, and I quote, despite prolonged media coverage of state government's budget crisis, only 1 in 7, and that's 15%, of all Oregonians knows the main source of state general fund revenue and the largest category of general fund expenditures. That was the 2005 Oregon Progress Board report. The Oregon Progress Board's recently released 2007 report indicates that Oregonians made no progress in becoming better informed about our state's perpetual revenue crisis. We are in a crisis, and ignorance is killing us. I want to draw your attention to a part of the Oregon Constitution that we don't talk about very much in this assembly, and that is Article 9, which is the chapter on finance, and Sections 2 and 6, which say, in essence, that when there is insufficient revenue, when there's insufficient revenue to operate government services, the legislature shall levy a tax. Again, that's in the Constitution. That's a constitutional mandate. We all swore an oath to uphold the Constitution. But as I said, and in my experience, we rarely have a conversation about that constitutional mandate. Now, we do have another mandate in the Constitution, and that is to balance the budget, and of course we're going to do that. The fact that we cannot escape, and again, which is why I say that this is the most important measure before us in this legislature, is that the system that we have was framed in the 20th century, in the 20th century, to meet 20th century needs. It's never going to work.
The
I think that we have to face the fact that once the session has concluded and we have our eyes on end of June, 1st of July, when the session is concluded, all the budgets that we are currently considering will reflect choices, investments, if you will, that will still reflect inadequate revenue and, again, unsustainable choices. We must move beyond what has become a patchwork approach to taking care of the fiscal needs of this state. And in the measure before us, we have that opportunity. It would be my hope, and I come to you with a plea, and with all due respect to my two colleagues who have just spoken, and acknowledging that what is being put forth here is an amendment to the main bill. I want to say to you that Oregon cannot wait. What is required of us is a different quality of leadership, courageous leadership, bold, fearless leadership, leadership that thinks outside of a box, that in fact throws the box away and stops thinking about the next election, stops thinking about what do the polls say, stops thinking about how we're going to hold on, how one party is going to hold on to power or not, based on whether they are willing to take up this conversation about tax reform, fiscal reform, revenue reform. This is our opportunity. Will we claim it? Oregon can't wait. We have a motto in Oregon that says, Oregon loves dreamers. I hope that there are some among the 90 of us who are willing to take this on in this session and start to move this state forward. I serve on the Human Services Subcommittee of Ways and Means, and I wish that you could sit there with me every day and hear the needs of the mental health community, of seniors, of people living with disabilities, of all those people who come in with their hopes focused on us as people who are going to deliver for them investments that will improve the quality of their lives. And we'll never be able to do that. We'll never be able to do that in any way any substantial way until we grapple with this problem of tax reform. We need tax reform now, and I'm pleading with you to examine the quality of your leadership. I think that's what all 90 of us need to do in this session, is examine what will be the quality of our leadership on this subject, on this issue, on this day, and as we go forward into the session. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Are there questions for our members? Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question about the amendments in terms of the makeup of the task force. And I recognized who all of these members were, but could you give me an example of associations representing taxpayers, what types of associations or organizations those might be?
Well, I think that would probably be Jason Williams Association, maybe Freedom Works, those people that are in those associations.
Okay. Thank you.
Russ Walker, Jason Williams, if I might be so specific, Mr.
Sure.
Chair. So.
Thank you.
And if I might add that we need to have a broad cross-section of people that serve and examine these issues. It can't be done with a narrow perspective one way or the other. But it has to be, I believe it has to be broad-based.
Representative Berger, yes, please.
Mr. Chair, if now would be a good time to make a couple of remarks. My name is on the original bill on this tax reform effort, and I am enormously supportive. But Representative Gelsler has brought up the amendment, and I was asked my thoughts in drafting this, and I will tell you that having gone through the Oregon Inc. process, where you have a core group of deciders who have experience making decisions, and then surrounding them advisors who are not voters but who certainly are stakeholders, was a very good model for getting decisions done in a forthright way, but didn't bog down in lots of discussions about everybody's little piece of the pie. And I think that's the model that is hoped for in this. You need people who are willing to stand up and make decisions. But if you get everybody at the table, then everybody starts putting their little stamp on things, and that's not a good model. So I think that's what we're looking for here, is that core group of deciders and good advisors and everyone's voice being heard.
Thank you.
Yes, to couple with what my colleague from Salem said, we need people that's looking at this as the future, not only of Oregon, but what's right for Oregon. That's what we need.
Thank you. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And colleagues, I think that there's no doubt that this discussion needs to move forward, and I think that you've laid out a good plan to do it. My only question is that there have been other task forces and groups put together before. I see a former chair of this committee in the back of the room who definitely helped to frame one of those efforts. So what do you think is different now or different in this proposal that will allow it to be successful?
I'll take a whack at that, Senator. I think, Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I think one is, I don't know if you notice it, but I have definitely noticed it in my particular area. All of a sudden, your tongue doesn't fall out when you do say sales tax in my area. So that's a difference. I think the other thing is, we, the people that are involved in this, if it's me or Representative Berger or whomever, or Representative Butler, do not politicize this process. Last time it blew up, and you and I, Mr. Chair, have had some discussions on this. It blew up over, I believe, gay rights and a cap on government spending, which really has a lot to do with tax reform. So therefore, as long as we do not politicize this process, we can go forth and start educating and get input from people, and educating each other and educating people on how it works.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, your question is an excellent question. A lot of folks will say that in order to move something as broad-based as this and change public policy, that you have to have literally the sky falls and you have disintegration. Personally, I believe that we're approaching that. The minimalist attitude that we have towards education in this state is appalling, as it's played out in our community colleges and in our higher ed systems. And we shared with you the disinvestment in the presentation that we made in the previous hearing about the disinvestment that we've made, to the tune in excess of $600 million if you were to bring it forward in today's dollars in this budget that we've made. That will, I believe, is playing out in a variety of ways. We, I believe, are reaching the crisis threshold in terms of what we're charging students to go to school in this state in higher education. They can't afford it. The community colleges used to be the lifeline, literally the lifeline, to get out of poverty, to better people's lives and improve their lives in a way that was doable for them in their families. And we're pricing them out of the market. The reference has been made in terms of social services that we're providing and the problems that we have in funding adequately. For example, the developmental disability communities. Major crisis, because you can't operate services with 60% turnover. We couldn't operate this institution with those kinds of turnover rates. So I believe that maybe cumulative, that there is a growing awareness that it is time that we have these discussions. I think maybe the big catalyst that is different today than has been in the past is the breach of good faith that has occurred with our federal government with respect to our timber-dependent communities in this state. That's $500 million, I believe, Paul, in a biennium, that is going away. And these communities do not have the ability to bootstrap themselves up. And I'm sure some of you have read the League of, or the Oregon Counties, Association of Oregon Counties reports on the problems that they have. They literally cannot do it by themselves. Are we going to let these timber-dependent communities literally fall into an abyss and the county systems of government? I don't think that we should. And I think that in and of itself should be sufficient motivation to say it's a little different today than it's been in the past. So, I used the metaphor to be open with the Oregon Trail. And it was not traveled by those weak of heart. And the only way they got there is they had a vision and they had strength of courage to put one foot in front of the other, to realize something better. And that's where we are today. We have this huge discussion in this building about revenue and the need for revenue. Well, why? Why is it such a strong discussion today? Are we going to solve this problem incrementally and patchwork? Or can we go at it systemically so that you're actually achieving specific objectives with what it does to investment, what it does to our economy, and what it does to taxpayers? And those that are carrying the burden today, we've demonstrated with 2530 that you can stimulate the economy, you can increase employment, you can have a net reduction in taxes, and you can backfill the structural budget gap that we have. 2530, I'm not apologetic today about 2530. I would be asking you to move it if we were in a point in the session where it was realistically possible to do that. It's not today, not on May 10th. So can we move this discussion forward in a way that will says let's have some solutions and then pick them up and let's deal with them? So that's a long-winded answer, Representative Rosenbaum, but we just got to have courage. And I would just like to make one other comment, if
please.
I may, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
This is not going to happen, clearly, not going to happen without the executive leadership and without the leadership within this both chambers to say, this is time. That's the key. Can we get that? And that's a challenge. And I think that's the challenge that we as legislators are giving to our leadership in state government, is can we move this forward? And now is the time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Oh, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we do have Senator Decker here.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, but I must excuse myself, and we'll let the senator come up because I have an appointment.
Well, I don't think he wants to be heard on this bill, but...
I will. But
oh, you do? Okay.
They were doing great. Although he's got a funny tie on it.
Mr. Chair, I would like, and I appreciate Senator Deckard being here now, some sort of a response relative to the status of a constitutional revision relative to all taxes, because that's what we're going to have because of Measure 5 and 50. In light of the corporate kicker taking and the establishment of a general purpose rainy day fund, has the climate changed, do you think, as a result of that? I would think that the voters would say, hey, wait a minute, Didn't you just take some money to get a leveler for the hills and the valleys? Would that change the response? And I don't know when the correct time to go to the voters is on something like this, but I'm anxious.
I've spoken way too much, Senator.
Well, I can do that. I mean, Mr. Chair, Representative.
And you may have a statement you'd like to make as well.
No. Vice Chair Butler, you know, the only thing that I would say is that
this is Senator Deckard.
Ryan Deckard from where your other vice chair is, where she's from, Beaverton. Representative Butler, I mean, the only thought that I have is that I really, really believe that in the next 4 to 5 years, and maybe even a little bit sooner than that, this state is going to have to tackle the structure that we have. If you look at the transportation problems, the county timber problems, education, higher education, and our ability to have a rational tax system, I just think it's coming. And how the legislature involves itself, I don't know a better forum than the one that we've been working on to involve ourselves in that discussion, because in the research that we've been doing, I think folks are more in tune than when Representative Shetterly and I toured the state before. I don't see him, but he's here. He's in the very furthest seat from you and us. 4 years ago, I just think that it's coming, and we got to think of ways that the legislature involves itself and helps precipitate this debate, because we have a lot of credibility if it is that 40-20 Republicans, most if not all of them, Democrats, most but if not all of them, business, labor. I think you need that type of climate to do something big.
Thank you. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've heard a good deal so far in the testimony about considerations of how our state is going to raise revenue, and I think that's an extremely important discussion to hold, but I haven't heard anything yet about what the Commission might be doing in terms of trying to keep some of the revenue that we already raise. And to the extent that our state gives away more revenue than we keep, I'm wondering what you envision the Commission doing to address that, which perhaps seems to be mathematically ignorant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. I assume you're talking about tax expenditures.
Yes, I am.
That certainly is in the realm of tax and revenue. So that definitely, I believe, would be a part of the discussion. Certainly, there would certainly be no prohibition against looking at that part of the equation.
I didn't see any prohibition on it, but I haven't heard any advocacy yet either. So I was just wanting to hear that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Other questions for this panel? Thank you. We appreciate the very thoughtful presentations today on a high level on these issues. I ran for the legislature in 2000 because I was convinced that we had a serious structural deficit that was going to prevent us from adequately funding our K-12 public school system. When I got here, I very quickly realized, as Senator Morris did a couple of years later, that when he arrived, that we have a gigantic structural deficit. And rather than repeat it all, I'll simply say that I agree with the point that you're making, that the circumstances, the coincidence of events, is coming to a head. When I can read in the newspaper that Oregon is 50th in the pay that it provides its state judges, and the next day I read about the comparison between Oregon and Washington in terms of higher education payments and in terms of research dollars brought into the university system because we are underfunding the basic core, when I'm asked to comment on the arts budget for a local television station, and I give a talk to the reporter in front of the camera about this budget deficit and about how those who are interested in the arts need to work on revenue reform and making certain that our community colleges and universities are funded, and that part of my talk is not cut
but is actually broadcast on the evening news, I know that we're getting closer to talking about this issue. I think you may be right. It may in fact be time. When Oregon adopted the income tax in the last century, it was one of those times when it had to. It was essential. We are getting very close. In fact, I think we agree that we're at that time when it must be done if we expect our children to have any hope of living better than we have, or even as well. I really appreciate your testimony, your comments. I hope you'll get this drafted in an amendment form that we can actually act upon.
It's in the process, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Has that generated anything else? Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
Been most generous.
Thank you. And with that, we are going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2530. And I have a quorum for working. Let's work.
You've got the whole panel here.
We're going to open work session on House Bill 3265. I thank our former chair for his patience in waiting for this. Yes.
The amendment, Mr. Chair, has made it out of LC, but we're still copying it. It's a small one.
He's holding his fingers only a half an inch apart. It's a small one.
It's being run through the machine right now, but I think there is a presentation that the sponsors and the people who have been working with this bill and the amendment that would like to reflect what the amendment of the Dash 4 would be once you put... Well, you lay your eyes on it, and therefore they have the only copy that I was able to come from, so maybe they've already gone through it. It's a tiny one.
Is that the Dash 4?
Yeah.
Thank you. Go ahead. Let's hear from the commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Lane Shetterly here as in my capacity as chair of the Oregon Law Commission. That was fun. I sure enjoyed the last hour and 15 minutes. And I mean that. You think I'm being facetious. That's a lot of fun, and I congratulate you for staying on the trail, I guess, to follow up on Senator Morse's apt metaphor. On this bill, Mr. Chair, I will be very brief and then turn it over to my much more knowledgeable compatriots. Mazin did tell you that the Dash 4s are on the table. As you can see, they're rather extensive. Cynthia Burns from the Department of Justice, Doug Goh, who served on the work group, along with Harvey, who is back before you, I think testified last on this as well, Harvey Rogers, also a member of the work group, will lead you through the report that describes the amendments that are in the Dash 4s. Apart from that, Mr. Chair, I think I leave it to your good judgment as to how to proceed from here. I think they will be able to tell you if these are ready to move, if you're so inclined today. There's, I think, a referral to Ways and Means that would keep these amendments for further reflection, but I think they're just about, if not perfect. But again, I thank you for listening to their report. They will describe this as very important. Perhaps nothing quite to get the blood stirring as tax reform, but still critical to the management of the state's affairs and state's finances. So I thank you again for the work session on this bill today. And with that, we'll turn it over to this panel of experts.
Thank you.
I was chosen to lead. I'm Cynthia Burns from the Attorney General's Office. I represent the Office of the State Treasurer in connection with their bond sales. And so I'll briefly talk about the very beginning of the bill, which deals mostly with state borrowing and the duties of the state treasurer in connection with that.
Let me first ask a question or two so we can set the stage. Is the Dash 4 another complete replacement of the bill, or is it something smaller than that?
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, it's pretty much a complete replacement of the bill. This is the bill.
Great. Thank you very much. Go ahead. And recognize that none of us have actually seen the Dash 4s yet.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, the Dash 4s are very similar to the Dash 3s in terms of the overall structure. The structure didn't change.
It was the Dash 2.
Or the Dash 2s, sorry. Yes. Oh, yeah, the Dash 3s were one paragraph. Yeah, this is bigger than the Dash 3s.
Well, let me just say that I finished reading the section on state bonding on the Dash 2 amendments last night. I found them very clear. For someone who's not an expert in the area in which you're describing, I had no trouble following the approach, and I'm assuming there aren't a lot of changes in that section of the bill. But I was very pleasantly surprised about how easy it was to read and how clear and understandable it was.
Good.
I'm looking forward to reading the Dash 4s.
Here they come, Mr. Chair.
Well, Chair Barnhart. I think that the Dash 4s will look very familiar to you. There are some changes, but not a lot. There were some places where we thought some authority hadn't gotten picked up or a change or a section, but it should look very familiar to you. So the purpose from the state treasurer's perspective and DOJ's perspective in terms of the state section was to modernize these statutes and clean them up. There were a lot of conflicting provisions. Many of the state's borrowing statutes have been structured so that the borrowing authority for agencies is scattered in their agency chapters. And many of those chapters date back to the 30s, the 40s, you know, they're very old statutes, and at that time, agencies issued bonds on their own without much involvement of the state treasurer. In the 1980s, that started to change, and the treasurer was given oversight over most of the state's bond programs and had an increased role in approval and how bonds were issued and sold. And the way they did that was by putting a notwithstanding and a bunch of other notwithstandings in Chapter 286, which was the chapter that dealt with the state treasurer. And there weren't a lot of conforming changes to the agency statutes. Well, as we went through the next 20 years and capital markets have changed and the way public entities borrow changed, the statutes got tweaked. They would get tweaked for one agency but not for another agency, or maybe the authority would be in the treasurer but not in the agencies. And so we ended up with this big mishmash, and it was getting harder and harder to fix one statute without being worried that we were screwing something up for somebody else somewhere else. So that was sort of our motivation to undertake this project. So the goal was mainly to eliminate a lot of duplication and some contradictions that were in the existing statutes, to fill holes in authority where one agency was granted the authority to do a new and innovative kind of financing, but the other agency just didn't get it for what seemed to be no real good policy reason. And to reflect the current practices where the treasurer oversees sort of when and how the state's bonds are issued and works with the agencies in coordinating their sales and things like that. We tried to be very careful and not take away any agency's existing authority, to leave that where it was, but really to reflect the current practices of how bonds are issued for the state of Oregon today. And hopefully we did that. I'll turn over to Doug.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Doug Goh. I'm a partner with the bond counsel firm of Orrick, Harrington, and Sutcliffe in Portland. And I'm here today on behalf of my state agency and local government clients and as a member of the Government Borrowing Work Group to thank the committee for your consideration of House Bill 3265 as reflected in the Dash 4 amendments. And we too, other than a quick reading in the back of the room, have not had a chance to review the Dash 4 amendments, but on a quick go through, I think they're in fine shape. There may be some very technical items that we'll need to review carefully. And one of the reasons, just in terms of background, and I know many of you before you were in the legislature, were on city councils and county commissions and so forth, and have worked with public finance. But the municipal bond market is unique because the municipal bond market, unlike any other securities market, requires that bond counsel, nationally recognized bond counsel, render unqualified, that is, unqualified legal opinions that the bonds that are issued by the state, or in the case of local governments, by the local government, that the bonds are legal, valid, and binding obligations of that government. And because of that, while all of us are always want to have clear, consistent legislation, it is very important to the state and local governments and to those of us, like Harvey and I, who practice as bond lawyers, that we're able to render those unqualified opinions. And the work group has worked very hard together with legislative counsel and with the members of the public finance community and our clients to make sure that the Dash 4 amendments will meet that unqualified opinion standard. Again, I want to thank the committee for your consideration.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Harvey Rogers. I'm a partner at Kirkpatrick, Lockhart, Preston Gates, and Ellis LLP. We just changed our name. I'm the primary author of the Law Commission report, which I hope you have, and is an attempt to whittle down to a relatively few pages the very large bill that you have in front of you. I'd like to take a moment to just talk about the process for getting to this bill, hopefully to be comforting. The first bill was what we had all worked on without the changes that we wanted to it. Those just didn't get into the legislative council process. And then when they did get in, they came out different than we thought. But at that point, there weren't very many words that needed to change. It was just that some of the words really did need to change. And we submitted additional changes, but they were again lagged. So this bill that was just delivered today, we believe, has all of the changes that we had been asking for. And we would confirm that absolutely had we had it for more than about 25 minutes ourselves. The report that you received is written based on what we submitted to Legislative Council. There is no policy disagreement between the work group and Legislative Council about what the bill should ought to do. It's just a matter of flogging the final words so that everybody's comfortable that the bill does what we're asking it to do. With your permission, I will give you a very high-level brief overview of what's going on in the bill, and then if you would like more, you can ask questions.
I think that's very appropriate for the committee. Let me just say that it's my intention, members, to allow us at least several days to read this bill and to be ready with additional questions on it. I know we're getting very late in the session, but I don't want to pass anything out of this committee that everyone hasn't had an opportunity to read. And I think it would be beneficial if you would approach the Dash 4 draft on the basis that people actually are going to look at it, read it, and try to understand it. And if you would approach it from that angle, that would be very helpful, I think.
Sure.
I was able to piece together the essence, I think, of the first section of the first 40 sections of the bill on state bonding, and I liked it a lot. But not being an expert, I don't know whether I ought to like it or not, or not. But there were even some areas within that might benefit from some explanation. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I found most helpful the four-page handout, which section by section gave us the analysis, and that is really a good roadmap as to how to work your way through this. And in fact, it does show on pages 1 and 2 that the first 40 sections are the state bonding and the Treasurer's participation in state bonding. But then section by section after that, for the next page and a half, I think are most helpful. And will we be provided similar roadmap for the Dash 4s?
we can conform this report to the dash fours. We believe the report is substantively accurate, but the section numbers may not match up.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, once that's available to us, if that would be handed out at one of our meetings, that would be helpful for us to be able to coordinate that other file.
Thank you. And you know, if in the next day or two you could let me know whether you think we're substantially there after you've had a chance to review the portions of the dash four amendments that you asked for changes to be made from the dash twos, that would be very helpful. It would be my intention at that point to ask the Legislative Revenue Office to distribute the dash four amendments to the members of the Ways and Means Committee so that they would be able to have it in advance rather than having us take several days to review the bill and then having them take several more days to review the bill just because of the press of time. It is going to them. They need to have a chance to look at it. And if you'd be prepared to let NASM know when, if you believe this is it, that we're ready to go, then that will be his trigger to distribute this small packet to the members of the Ways and Means Committee and the subcommittee that will be considering it. That would be helpful. Thank you. And please go ahead.
Well, if with your indulgence, if you all have the report, I'm going to give you what I think I would like to hear if I were in your position. So this bill will save costs for state and local governments. Doug gave you a more elaborate explanation of that. But basically, that's what this does. It makes borrowing more efficient. It saves money for state and local governments and ultimately for citizens. It makes a real effort not to change any substantive state borrowing policies. But if you flip over to page 3 of 9 of this this report, I make an effort to list the things that we think are policy changes. And if you are going to take the time to go through the bill, and I really encourage you to go through the report as well, you'll see them laid out here. I'll summarize them by saying they are subtle. There's nothing in the bill, for example, that authorizes somebody to go borrow money in some completely different way or to borrow money who couldn't borrow before or to commit resources of government that couldn't be committed before. What the bill does, it allows all the provisions of Oregon law that relate to borrowing to talk to each other and to work efficiently. And then there are these policy changes that are listed in A through M, and we tried hard to make them clear. If you're going to be back looking at this again, I would suggest that you look through those, and then we'll be back, and you can ask us questions at that time. As Representative Butler said, we went through section by section on the bill itself, explaining what the sections did. We'll provide you a conformed copy of the report that matches the sections up. And if you don't wish more from us now, I think we're happy to stop here at this point.
Thank you. Members, what's your what would you like? Do you need more information today? It is my thought that we'd meet on this. We'd put this on one of our agendas next week for consideration. Yes, Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I find the remarks here extremely helpful because it points to where I admit that I did not spend my evening reading the dash twos, Mr. Chair. And I'm so relieved that I didn't.
Sometimes procrastination is useful.
There are times. But now that I really think we're getting down to it, I probably will not read every word, but I do appreciate the opportunity to from this document to be pointed to where there are substantive changes that I can review, and I don't think I need to hear any more endless, you know, line by line today until I've had at least a chance to look at it and see what the questions that I might have are.
Thank you. Other comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Before you go, you still have some more work to do. I know that. You're going to have to go back and read this thing again and see whether the Legislative Council got it right. I have to say that on my own behalf, and I think on behalf of the committee, I'd like to say how much we appreciate the work that you're doing on this. As I read those sections that I did get through last night, I became aware of how much legal drafting has progressed since I attended, went to law school, and how much better it is today. Either that or I'm finding it easier to read this dense stuff. I'm not sure which one. I think it's probably the former. And we very much appreciate your work. I think we're getting close to the home stretch on this bill, and we appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, one thing from the last hearing I have to bring to your attention, although Senator Gordley said late June, early July, I want you to forget the early July part.
Yeah.
Concentrate on the early, late June.
Yes, well, you may be aware that we have a resolution of both houses that indicates we're going to be up by June 29th and would require a rule suspension to stay longer.
Just so, bringing it to your attention, Mr.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Madison has his cruise tickets for July 1st. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3265. Thank you. I'd like, let's see, who's still here? sort of lost track of the agenda.
First
and third bills, Mr. Chairman, have been handled.
First and third?
Yep.
We've done first and third, yes. Yes. And we have a lot more to go. Let's open a work session on House Bill 2793.
Mary was whispering that really loud.
Oh, was she? Well, the reason I do that is because this is one I think we might actually get through today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2793 has a -1 amendment, go through the bill first. It exempts tangible or intangible property rights or property interests of Oregon utilities in or related to electric utility lines and referenced in certain agreements, applies to tax years beginning on or after July 1, 2007. This bill has been discussed before. It pertains to an omission from, a deliberate omission from last session when the Pacific Northwest Intertie was the issue, and certain out-of-state entities that passed and used the intertie through Oregon had been taxed based on their intangible property rights, basically the use of the intertie. And basically the in-state cooperative, one of one exists at this point in time, is not exempt from the intangible aspects or tangible property because it's in state. And so they've come to you before you with a request for equity to be exempt like the out-of-state entities. And the original bill was very loose with regard to other similar transmission lines. That was tightened up, and now it pertains particularly to the relationship between the one entity that happens to exist right now in Oregon is a co-op that does use the Northwest Pacific Intertie, and that's what the bill addresses.
And would you describe the revenue impact?
Yes.
It does hit several different counties, does it not?
It does. It's distributed across several counties. I don't have that spreadsheet with me, but that's how the impacts were estimated based on the total amount of the revenue loss.
Representative Witt?
Mr. Chairman, if you're ready for a motion.
Sure.
I'd move the -1 amendments to House Bill 2793.
Representative Witt moves the -1 amendment to House Bill 2793. Is there a discussion? Is there any?
Mr. Chairman, I talked to the bill sponsor about this. He wasn't sure why or a similar electrical transmission line was originally included. It is his desire that it be removed. And I also know that the Oregon Rural Electric Co-op Association is very supportive of this amendment as well.
Thank you very much. Is there any objection to the -1? I don't see any objection, and therefore it is so ordered. Representative Witt?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2793 as amended with the dash one amendments to, is there a subsequent on this?
No.
To the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Witt moves House Bill 2793 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Representative Brun.
Excused.
Representative Butler.
Yes.
Representative Gelser.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Excused.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Chair Barnard.
Aye. I'll ask my usual question. Should this bill go on the consent calendar? If not, I would. My thought would be that we'd ask Representative Holvey to carry. All right, let's do that. The bill having received the required majority, the motion is adopted and the bill goes to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. We'll ask Representative Holvey to carry. If he is unable to, we'll find another carrier. But that's what we'll assign to for now. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2793. Okay. I'd like to open a let's see who's here. I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2718. If you recall, we are on the dash three amendments on this bill, and we held it over, and then we held it over again. I thought Mary Botkin was going to be here to talk about the bill, but I don't see her. Do we have a sign up? Okay. Mr. Butler is here. Yes, please come forward.
Oh, I'm Robert Butler of Portland, Oregon. Good afternoon, members of the Revenue Committee and Chair. I'm going to be very brief. I saw that there was someone going to testify on it, and so I was going to be prepared to testify if there was new testimony. But I guess I would like to take 2 minutes. And first of all, to say that our mission, if by the original intent of the bill, works well with the revisions that are in R3. And if we were to combine the features of R3 with, if I may call it RO, the package is doesn't bother what I feel is the intent of RO, that they're complementary. And my last comment was that you met some people talking about fuel cells. Three different firms. And I was talking about things like Tektronix and Hyster and so on and so forth, where Tektronix started in the garage in Beaverton. Those three firms you saw are our future. Every one of those is a small firm. Our jobs will come from them. Their entrepreneurialism and the fact that they're small, most of our jobs will come from them. Now, their CPA should advise them that if they think of going to Lane County, they have the worst tax consequences in the United States for a small business if Lane County passes its measure next week. Same with Multnomah County. They will pay three times as much taxes in Multnomah County and Lane County as they do in Washington County and Deschutes County, which is where they're from.
Okay. Would you mind moving the microphone a little further away from your mouth? One of the problems is that with mics, these mics, speaking directly into them actually causes them to distort quite a bit.
Can I have a new clock? No, I'm just kidding.
That's actually quite a bit better.
Thank you, sir. Since that's our future, I think we should nurture them instead of prejudice them at the back of send them to the back of the bus in Multnomah County, in the other counties considering business income taxes, and the cities that I mentioned to you that also are considering that. To be state friendly, I think the cities have to work, and the governments within the cities need to work together such that we're efficient and can do work throughout the region. That's one of the primary benefits of this net mutual revenue bill, is commerce and nurturing our future and making it easier for every community to file their business income taxes using the state format. So I encourage you to blend those three features together, and I think we'll be a much more attractive place for our future small employers to make us be. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Butler? Thank you, sir. We appreciate your testimony. Mary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mary Botkin with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And I think for the purposes of today's hearing, I'm actually also here on behalf of the PERS Coalition. And I'm here to discuss House Bill 2718 and the amendments, the Dash 3 amendments, I believe.
Yes.
And I signed up as neutral because I think that there are legal challenges with the amendments. And I don't mean currently before the courts. I think that there are challenges with a sort of getting to where we want to be with some sort of a local income tax based on past court actions. And unfortunately, the court actions have not been lower courts, but have been the higher courts. And it has actually gone to the Oregon Supreme Court under Hughes. And I have been in contact with our lawyer who handled, or the lawyer who handled the Hughes case on the taxation of retirement benefits as proposed by, I believe, Governor Kitzhaber. Kitzhaber. So it's been a while ago. And I know that the way that we sort of got around the Hughes case in Multnomah County was we just simply exempted all retirement income from tax. That solved the federal retiree issue, it solved the private sector retiree issue, and it solved the public sector retiree issue. It doesn't raise as much, but it stands, and it doesn't get challenged legally. Now, in talking with Mr. Hartman...
So you exempted all retirement income.
That is my understanding.
Okay.
Was that they exempted all retirement income so as to not face any legal challenges on their ITACs. I think philosophically, you know, we're sort of in a box because our members not only pay the tax, but they benefit directly from the tax, obviously, through their jobs. So we have historically supported local income taxes and would do so again. And I know that this is sort of centered around the Lane County proposal currently, but I think that as we move forward, we're going to see more and more local governments trying to overlay some sort of local tax to pay for their local services. And our challenge is to help this committee find a way to do that that doesn't lead to successful legal challenges that just throws it all out. I mean, I think we're all better off if we sort of take a look and listen to what the Supreme Court had to say, and I think the best way to do that is to call those attorneys in who handled those cases that went to the Supreme Court and challenge them to assist us in finding the way around future challenges. And I know that the AFSCME Council 75 is certainly willing to be a part of that discussion. I think the PERS Coalition generally is willing to be a part of that discussion. I don't know whether there's any of the federal retiree representatives around anymore. I have not seen them in the building for a really long time. I'm sure that if we started taxing federal retirement, we'd see them again. But I really don't know exactly who their go-to person is anymore, or I would call them myself. But certainly, I think that this will warrant some discussion, and I don't think any of us want to be naysayers just out of hand. And that's why I signed up as neutral on the bill, because we really have a vested interest in seeing that local governments are allowed to pay for their local services in some manner. A bill passed today that cut off an avenue of tax revenue for some of our local government services and did so for the next 10 years. And so we have concern that we eliminate some of these pieces that allow the local governments an option of being able to pay for services that their citizens find critical. And so I'm saying a lot and not saying anything right now, so I'll just stop talking.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mary? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mary, this may not be directed directly to you, but I just wanted to make sure that I understood correctly as to the Dash 3 under Section 2 in that bill. It provides that a local jurisdiction, a political subdivision, may impose the tax. It doesn't say that they have to.
Right.
It doesn't say that they won't. It basically, right now, they haven't been able to, but under this particular subsection, it provides that they may impose it. So they could using this and recognizing that the whole process of the discussion of income taxes is evolving as we meet on other kinds of taxation and even potentially constitutional revision relative to taxation, this might be an important thing to leave in there so that local jurisdictions could assess. Vail might say, you know what, we don't have that many federal or state retirees, let's just go ahead and impose it based upon what we know about everybody that files in zip code 97913. Mm-hmm. And then just go on down from there. So I'm anxious about that. The second question I have is probably for staff, and that is under Section 1, it provides that the Department of Revenue shall provide. Does that mean that if a local political subdivision decides that they want to administer their own, and I understand Lane County is still wondering what they want to do, if they want to administer their own, or if they want the city of Portland to administer it, does the permissive language shall provide allow them to say, nah, we don't want the State Department of Revenue to do that, we'll do our own?
They might be able to opt out under different statute 305.620, but as I read this, it would require the Department of Revenue.
So shall is not permissive here?
I don't believe so. May would be the permissive.
Well, it requires the Department of Revenue to provide the service. It doesn't require the county to accept it, does it?
Yeah, I think the Department of Revenue must provide it if the county wants it. But my question was exactly that, as the chair has been better able to clarify it.
Well, I'll double check with Ledge Council, but my interpretation was that it was required. Mm-hmm. But I'll follow
required.
Up. But I can follow up with that.
I took it as permissive if the county wanted it. But I need that definition and explanation. Because, again, I think what we're trying to do is we've narrowed it down from one point to another, and that is Portland, Multnomah County, they don't want us monkeying around. Lane County has testified in opposition. I believe Eugene was in that process as well. And what we're trying to do is just give ourselves the maximum parameters.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mary, I did also have concerns about the language that you're referring to because we hadn't received any testimony on it, and I did contact another representative of public employees who checked with some lawyers, and it may be the same group that you're representing today, and they came back and said they believe it's unconstitutional, this provision. So,
well, Hughes is pretty narrow in being able to apply. The decision is pretty narrow about how you apply a tax, and you absolutely cannot tax benefits that are already accrued under Hughes. And there's a whole issue about what constitutes accrued. So as you sit here today, you are accruing benefits under PERS or under whatever retirement system you're under. And as you accrue those benefits, they cannot be taxed. So if you implement a tax at 4 o'clock today, it can only take effect on benefits that you accrue after 4 o'clock. And so, it is a complicated, legalistic decision that I am not qualified to respond to other than just very, very briefly on the overview of it.
And Mr. Chair, if that's right, even if this language is permissive, if it gives authority to do something that is not allowed under this decision, then it would seem to me that we couldn't do that.
Yeah. Thank you. Other questions for Mary or comments?
It's sort of the way it's written right now, it feels sort of like an empty basket. And I hate to see people go home with a basket that they think has something in it that really doesn't. And I'd rather see us spend a little more time talking about how to construct it so that it gives local governments a tool that they can really utilize if their voters choose to do so. And so,
thank you. I think given the testimony that my plan is to ask Ledge Council what they think of it and perhaps look at this permissive versus mandatory language in the
I'm sure that the PERS Coalition as a group would be happy to ask Mr. Hartman to come down and meet with Ledge Council if that made some sense or if it was helpful to Legislative Council or your committee staff, whoever, because again, it's in our best interest to make sure that whatever we pass has some real benefit and that there's a clear process by which people can use it in their local communities.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to be heard today on House Bill 2718? If not, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2718. Colleagues, we have a bill that we've held over for several times, which I think is now ready. If we can take 3 or 4 more minutes, we might be able to get it out. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 173. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard today on Senate Bill 173? Is there anyone on our list? Deborah. In case we need you. All right. You don't mind coming up during the work session if we have questions?
Not at all.
Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 173 and open the work session on Senate Bill 173. Representative Berger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I had questions around the language in page 2 of this bill. I have been persuaded in conversation and in testimony that I do now understand the language of the bill and what that kind of an association is, and I am would like to move Senate Bill 173 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
No, we don't have a subsequent on this one, do we?
No.
Thank you. Representative Berger moves Senate Bill 173 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Representative Brown.
Excuse.
Representative Butler.
Yes.
Representative
Gelter?
Aye.
Representative Olson excused?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Chair Barnard?
Aye. The motion, having received the required majority, is adopted, and Senate Bill 173 will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Does anyone have yes?
I would be happy to carry.
Thank you. Representative Gelser will carry. And with that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 173, and we are going to have to carry over the work session on House Bill 2592. And Paul, have I hit it? We have. Thank you. With that, the Revenue Committee is adjourned.